Hi, everyone. Welcome to Domain Sherpin. Thank you for tuning in to the podcast with the best domain name and digital asset content in the world. Today's episode is a down the rabbit hole called Down to the Wire, where Drew and I are joined by none other than Andrew Alleman, founder, owner, and operator of Domain Name Wire, the preeminent news source for the domain name industry. Andrew was actually the first interviewee on Domain Sherpa back in 2011 and is now on for the first time since I'm host in what is our 865th show. But more on that later in today's episode. We talk about how Andrew started Domain Name Wire and then started the DNW podcast, both of which can be found at domainnamewire.com. And we also get Andrew's take on the current state of the domain space, the future of domaining, along with a discussion about domain marketplaces and why competition is good for innovation. All that and more is coming up on today's show. And remember, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can also watch the video version at domainsherpa.com and on our YouTube channel at ds.tv. You can also listen to the shows on Apple and Spotify and other podcast platforms as well. And please make sure to hit the like button and the subscribe button and all that good stuff everywhere that you can and help Domain Sherpa grow the pie. We also integrate our shows with Muse.ai, which provides search functionality for the shows and transcripts as well. So definitely check all that out. And big, huge shout out to DNWE, short for Domain Name Wholesale Exchange. It's a trading platform designed specifically for domain investors, streamlining the process of buying and selling domains to make it quicker and easier. With a community of over 3,500 investors, DNWE enhances market liquidity, facilitating more efficient transactions with standard domain listings, reverse auctions, standard auctions, and the soon-to-be-added portfolio auctions, which will include traffic portfolios. DNWE is part of EW3N, a family-run digital asset investment company based in London, England, that also operates DomainManage.com, a global sales platform, and Brandable.UK, a marketplace for UK and co.UK domains. Check DNWE out at DNWE.com. Also, their domain industry scavenger hunt is currently taking place. So if you haven't checked that out yet, please go to community.dnwe.com and check all that out. We'll be announcing a winner on or around August 22nd. Huge shout out to everybody who participated, but an even bigger shout out to everybody that contributed time and prizes and all that good stuff. Pretty awesome. And last but certainly not least, shout out to our own business, Media Options, the number one domain brokerage in the world, specializing in domain acquisition, sales, and appraisals. Find out more at mediaoptions.com, where you can also sign up for our newsletter for the best domain names and domain opportunities available in the market every week, and also featuring key insights and other helpful information related to branding, naming, and of course, domain investing. So with all that, it's now time to get into this episode of Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domain. So let's jump down a rabbit hole. What's up, Sherpa Network? Thank you for tuning in today. My name is Jonathan Tenenbaum, a.k.a. JT, a.k.a. Jayon, a.k.a. Sherpa Winfrey, and I'm the host and producer of Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. Today's show is part of our Down the Rabbit Hole series, because as we say here on Domain Sherpa, all roads lead to domains. And in the reverse, our work with domains has us venturing all the time into different areas, topics, some domain-related, some not-so-related, hence the jump down the rabbit hole. This particular show started with my homegirl, Jen Sales. Shout out to Jen. Described it as a tech-adjacent, digital asset, pop culture, tangent positive monthly podcast with some domain stuff thrown in for good measure, although we do find ourselves leaning into the domain stuff more often than not because that's who we are and what we do. So we try to find interesting people and topics to get into, and we do what we do, and today is no exception. Very, very excited. So let me go ahead and introduce the guest. We got a special guest, but I'll save that for a second. So I'll introduce the not so special guest, no offense, Drew, but over to my right, I got my boy Andrew Rosner, aka the not so special guest, aka Morpheus, aka Dirk Diggler, Digital Assets, aka Bobbly Swagger the Sniper, aka Greybeard the Domain Pirate. What's going on, dude? How are you?
I am great. You know, just kicking it. Summertime. Market's actually not even that bad considering it's mid-August. I'm living my best life. I'm actually going to have dinner tonight with Ryan Ewan from the new owner of DNWE and Domain Manage.
New
sponsor of Domain Sherpa, as a matter of fact. Shout out, Ryan. It just goes to show, too, you know, how you can go from one end of the spectrum to the other. We were going to actually box to settle our differences of opinion on a matter. And then we went from that to we're having dinner tonight. You know, it's amazing. This is what free market capitalism can do. It can make friends of enemies. you know.
Hey, all roads lead to domains. Well, hey, that's great. Shout out to Ryan. Shout out to Domain Managed DNWE. You know, very excited. New sponsor, the scavenger hunt that we're right in the middle of right now. We can talk a little bit about as we get onto the show. Definitely, you know, super cool and really appreciate everything they're doing and all the people who've been part of that. So now with that, let me get into the crux of this show because I'm super, super excited. For the first time on the show since I've been on the show, and I believe potentially was the first interviewee on Domain Sherpa of all time with Michael Seiger, shout out to Mike too, is the one and only Andrew Alleman, a.k.a. Andrew Pardue, a.k.a. Andrew Dice Alleman, a.k.a. Clark Kent, a.k.a. Domain Name Down to the Wire, a.k.a. Andrew, if you be my bodyguard, I could be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, and Betty, when you call me, you can call me Alleman. What's up?
Hey, guys. It's good to be here. I'm glad you asked me. I was feeling a little bit left out, you know, as like the first guest ever. I'm like, yeah, you know, eventually. And then JT starts managing the show. I'm like, I know JT, this will happen someday. And then, you know, I get it. I'm far down the list, but no, it's good to be here. It's good to be here.
No, well, this is, you know, look, you're one of those guys where every time I see you, I'm like, hey, got to get you on the show. And then just trying to coordinate things and finally able to make it happen. So I think it's awesome. And
I mean, I have Andrew on my podcast. So, you know, it's.
Well, and I was on your podcast.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. We need to do that again.
I would love. Sure.
Yeah. And I was on your podcast as well, you know, back when I ran NameJet. So which was also, and that was probably around the time that you and I first met. So, you know, it's interesting how long. And how far along things have come. And
we're all getting older. I realized that when we showed up at NamesCon the other day, or actually probably the first ones back from COVID. It's like, yeah, we've all aged a few more years. Yeah. So
no, we're not getting older. Yeah. We're getting better, you know, but
yeah, that's right. Better with age.
For anybody who doesn't know, which I can't imagine you'd be watching this show without knowing who Andrew is, but the owner and, you know, everything of Domain Name Wire, the number one journalistic site in the domain space. You know, we reference your articles and your stuff all the time. And you have your podcast as well, and which is also great. It's first interview to joking around saying this will be the last one. We could shut it all down after this. Now it's all come full circle.
How many episodes is Sherpa Head total now?
Oh, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Billy told me it was maybe a year ago. Billy told me, or 9 months ago or something. And
yeah, we're 10 plus years, right? And
when Mike shut it down, it was 404.
That's really cool.
I think, and that was 2019. I think I bought it from him 5 years ago. So
a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we've been pretty consistent. There was a small period there when Tess was the host that we weren't super consistent. Yeah. But the last 3 years we've been super consistent. So it's probably, you know, we're probably at like 2,500. I bet 3,000, something like that.
No. If we were 404, we're probably like 600. I would think we're in the six.
Am I crazy?
Yeah, your math is probably.
Oh yeah, 3 years.
You know, look, you're excited.
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
You've been doing this daily for the past few years. You just don't.
We have 10,000 episodes.
Yeah. No. Sorry. Yeah. I probably added.
We'll put 400
more episodes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. I think it's been about episodes. We're at the point now. We're at about that. You acquired it around halftime.
Yeah. Is there really no way for me to know that immediately? Is that not a
I number my shows, you know, we don't.
The problem is like I look in my stats in my podcast host and the number doesn't match. It's off by one or two, so I'm like, I guess I mess up. But
like, which one is?
Well, I would take off by one or two. I can't even get into the same order of magnitude right now.
Well, we will. I hate to put you on the spot, JT.
I didn't mean to throw you under the bus there.
Exactly. He's like, if only the guy that runs my stuff would actually have that data available. Anyway, my guess is we're right about 650. Let's see. We'll run the number. We'll put it in the show notes.
We'll play it. Come on, everyone. On your calculator, how many episodes?
Exactly. We have 500 in YouTube.
Yeah, I love it.
We've got 500 in YouTube. I don't remember. Billy didn't upload all of them to YouTube. But it was the bulk of it. So I bet 600 is about right.
Yeah. So cool.
Well, man, I mean, that's something to be proud of. I know how much work it is. I know how much work it is. It's a lot of work to put these things together. So,
the way I think about it is between your podcast and Domain Sherpa, it's really the only living archive of the people and the stories of the domain industry. I mean, literally, like, those stories, the people who were involved, the transactions, the controversies, all of this stuff really would just, you know, I mean, okay, you have some written blogs and you have some articles, et cetera, but to actually see and hear the people who were involved in this industry, it's really the only documented history of it. Living archive.
Yeah. How many episodes do you have, Andrew?
I'm coming up on 500. I think I'm like 496, 497. Got a big one coming up, I guess. But you know, you're right, Drew. Like Lonnie Bork did an episode with me, and when he passed away, his wife said she has their kids listen, you know, to the episode, that sort of thing.
Totally.
And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of neat to have just kind of recordings.
Dude, I get goosebumps thinking about that. Legitimately, yeah. Like that's just, you know what I mean? That's it's important. It's really important.
Yeah, you know, peace, Lonnie. You
know. Someday, let's say I live a perfectly healthy life and blah, blah, blah. My kids are young, you know, when they're 25 and they're like, you know, God only knows where the world is going to be in, you know, let's say 15 years, right? I mean, I can't even begin to fathom where we are more than 5 years out from now. But in 15 years, whatever it is, wherever we're at, it's going to be a very different world than where we are right now. And, you know, when my kids are like, you know, what do you really do? Like, they know I'm in domains and blah, 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 but they're too young to really like grasp it. And to be able to go back and like listen to that is invaluable. I think it's really cool.
It will be cool.
Yeah.
I recently went back and digitized my parents' home movies. And you know, of course we, you know, back in the growing up in the 80s and 90s, we get mad at my dad for walking around with a big camcorder following us around. But now it's pretty cool to have it, you know. It is pretty
100%.
Cool.
I tried to do the same, but my mom had them in the basement and they got moldy. Yeah. And apparently once they get moldy, you're Dunsky.
My mom did it before she passed. She had put everything on DVD, and so we've got a bunch of those. And even nowadays, like just trying to get photos and stuff with our family, I'm always joking around. I'm like, make your memories. Everybody take the obligatory pictures and try to get a little bit of video here and there when we're doing stuff. And, you know, or like a basketball tournament, all the kids are like, oh, man, okay, coach, or okay, dad. But I'm telling you, it's like, you'll see, guys. I mean, it's going to be the kind of, and it's so funny because they, you know, so much of their life exists online anyway and sort of digital media and whatnot. And, you know, it's like, you know, it goes fast and then those moments are gone, you know. What'll be kind of crazy though is, you know, with us with enough stuff online, there will probably be some ability to create sort of this AI Drew,
for better,
you know,
or worse,
for your kids. So they'll be like, hey dad, can I get some advice? Although advice will basically be kill them all, kids. Like, you know, it's like
Ayn Rand, read Ayn Rand.
You know, this AI, you talk about ghost in the machine, man. It'll
which
be,
one you want, Andrew? got about seven different books right there.
But no, I think it is. It's going to be, it's a brave new world, but it is important to live in the moment because these times, they go so quick. And, but it is, you know, capturing it is pretty, pretty cool. So,
yeah.
And, I mean, and, you know, also too, like as people, you know, are no longer with us, you know, Jason Shepherd, you know, when he passed, like we took some of the clips from the shows that he was on and it was really touching. Like Billy, I mean, when he put together this little, just a small little montage and stuff, and it's like, it's almost hard to watch, you know, it's so like, but at the same time, it's so, know so much of like you get to remember him and see, you know, it's just all it's important. I think that just doubles back on what Drew said, which is, you know, and the fact that you guys and Mike, you know, big shout out to Sager as well, I mean, have been doing this for as long, and the other folks in the space too, you know, I mean, we always, when we kind of mentioned, whenever we mentioned Domain Name Wire, we're always mentioning domain investing with Elliot. And although I feel like Elliot kind of has more of the slant from like a pure investor standpoint, where yours feels more like,
well, Elliot's not necessarily a journalist. He's more of a blogger.
Yeah.
Which is, well, I don't think, a judgment, or I think it's just a description.
It all kind of blurs together.
What he does,
Elliot talks a lot about his personal experience, right? Which I do a little bit, but, and it's great. I love his stuff. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, no, no.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and then the point I was going to make, though, is that you guys have all been doing this for so long, and it's like, and we joke around, and we're like, if you don't like the show, we'll give you, you know, we'll give you a refund of what you paid, you know, to watch it. Like, it's like you guys are taking all this time and giving out all this knowledge and information, and just, you know, it's just, you're giving a lot of yourselves, and it's not necessarily, you know, it's not the, you know, the core of what you guys maybe do or would want to do with your time if it wasn't. You know, there's a very altruistic piece to it too, which I appreciate, and I, you know, I hope, and I think the audience does. But anyway, but real quick, let's talk about real fast. So, so as far as when you started, so you're 500 episodes in on the podcast. Did you start the podcast around the same time that you started writing? That you started?
No, no. So I started Domain Name War back in 2005. Okay. And it's up to, so I can look it up,
years,
but yeah, yeah. So it'll be 20 years next March. And I checked recently, I'd written, I think there were like 15,000 posts on the site, and I'd written almost all of them. You know, I've had some other people write over time, so maybe 1,000 of them, but yeah, it's a little ridiculous. Sometimes I'll write about a topic and I'll reference something, and someone's like, you do know you wrote about that in like 2008, you know, and they're like, I'm like, I can only keep so much in my head, you know. So.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I thought it was just like blowing. No, it was great.
Yeah,
so easy to write.
But you know, back at the time, there weren't. So I mean, Ron has been doing a great job in DN Journal,
yeah, but
mostly about
Jack.
The sales and the profiles. But there's no one doing like daily news back then, and everyone was on the forums, right? DN forum and that sort of thing, and blogging had. I mean, WordPress came out a couple years before
that. Before trolls existed.
Yeah, yeah. I had Matt Molenweg on the show from WordPress. He's like 2005. I mean, that was like early days of WordPress. So, the world was.
You had
was
to
very
be different. Like a techie to even have heard of WordPress.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, and there was no such thing as like WordPress hosting. You had to.
Yeah.
Set up hosting and then download WordPress, upload it to your server and install it and all this jazz. So it has changed a lot.
Every time you updated it, everything broke.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that hasn't necessarily changed, but
yeah, that's true.
But, we've been, we've got this refresh of Sherpa that we want to get a lot, but we're so, you know, cautious to not break everything.
Yeah.
Our WordPress theme doesn't even really exist anymore. It only exists in the sites that still use it, but there's no support and it doesn't like, you know, so anyway, but keep going. So 2005, you decided to get.
Yeah. Yeah, really. I started it as a hobby. I was working with the guys who eventually formed iReit, Internet Reit, back in the day. Uh-huh. And I remember we're sitting. We had just gone to an SEO conference in New York City, and we were sitting there at the airport lounge afterward. And the trifecta of us just wasn't working out personality wise. And you know, I was like, you know, guys, this just isn't a fit for me. So. On the plane ride home from New York to Austin, I was sitting there and I was like, you know, I still want to do something other than just buying and selling domains. So, and then I settled on starting a blog. And it started really as a hobby at first, right? And then I think Cito might have been the first company to reach out to me saying, hey, can we like throw some ads up here? That sort of thing. And then other companies followed after that. Cito's been advertising for, you know, I guess close to 20 years now.
Wow.
So it just from there, it kind of became enough to become kind of a business with all the advertising support from the industry. And yeah, the rest is history.
And then when did you start doing the podcast piece? Was that?
So that was 2014.
Okay.
So, you know, Mike had been doing Sherpa for a little while at that point. And, you know, one thing I remember looking around and I was like, you know, forums had kind of died. You know, I guess we still have one forum that's really kind of cooking in our industry and some others that are making an effort at it. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of like, you know, everything changes. And will people be reading blogs in 10 years or will that have changed? You know, social media was changing the landscape and that sort of thing. So I figured I'd, you know, try this whole podcasting thing. And I remember I had done a couple years earlier, I'd done like a I call it radio, right? Because podcasting wasn't that big of a thing. Kind of like mm-hmm. what what I guess Moniker was doing.
Monty was doing
Domain Masters.
Domain Masters.
Domain Masters.
Because we took that
Domain
over.
Domain Masters
for...
Radio with
Webmaster.
Webmaster FM. Radio was
FM, I think, .fm like... or whatever. And because we, Scott Pruitt and I, when I took over NameJet, we took over the Domain Masters show and we did that for a little while. And, and Monty had what was it, like Matt Cutts maybe from Google. You know, he had some pretty interesting guests back in the day. I think that's who it was, but it was kind of,
you know, it's funny too. I'll go to some like shows, some conferences, and some people come up and I'm like, oh, I love your podcast. They never go to Domain Name Wire, right? They only listen to the podcast. Whereas a lot of other people, you know, don't listen to podcasts. They only sure. read, you know, blog posts and that sort of thing. So it's kind of interesting. So
yeah.
I'm glad I did it, but man, as you guys know, it's a lot of work doing a podcast and,
you've got to
yelling at JT and telling him and Billy what to do. Like it's exhausting, but
I gotta accept calendar invites, I gotta check my calendar.
And for you guys who, you know, more traditional like actual podcast hosts, you know, I kind of fell into this because it was around the time that I came in, you know, to work for Drew. Tess was, you know, taking a new opportunity and it was like, hey, here you go, you know? And, talking to Mike and stuff, you know, and I love it. I think it's been awesome. But talking with Mike, even at the time since then, you know, I realized how much he appreciated sort of the podcast space. You know, he'd be like, hey, check out this webinar or this thing or this online forum and, you know, just different things around podcasting, you know, where I'm like, it's funny. You take it so seriously and we take it seriously in that we're doing this consistently, but you know, he was really about it. And I think you kind of come from that same sort of school of like, you know, almost old school in your approach of like, you know, dedicating time and doing it professionally, I guess, in a way, like, you know, even when, you know, it's not part of an enormous company or something, but you guys have done this, continue to knock it out. The fact that Mike finally get through up the white flag and bounce, right? Like
it's kept it going, you know? I've thought about that many times. But it's like, oh, I don't have a guest for next week. What am I going to do? You know,
That's the story of my life, you know. And, but I will say, you know, for us, it's cool. We have the benefit of, you know, multiple guests on these shows and we do it with Zoom.
Right.
So we got the video piece. So once we get everybody gathered up, you know, the actual shows are fun. Like this is fun, right? This is cool.
Yeah.
And this makes it worth it. And then when you put it out there and you got people that are so receptive and, you know, get real value and, you know, and then you hear stories about, hey, I had my first domain sale because it was something you guys said that led me to do this, or, you know, you've helped me, you know, change my whole life trajectory and stuff like that. And that's the stuff where you're just like, man, it really is pretty awesome. And, you know, recognizing that, you know, once you sort of fall in love with the domain space and then you're like, all right, well now I'm in this and what can we do to help this whole idea of rising tide, lifting all boats and all that kind of stuff. And it really takes
in the last year and a half in particular, I would say, and I would think about this a little bit, but I don't know if it's like a new generation of people in the space or if it's just a different time and people are grateful or content has improved, but I'd be curious. I don't know if you've seen the same thing, but like in the last year in particular, year and a half, way more just gratitude, like people blindly reaching out and just saying, you know, thank you. Like, you have no idea how much I appreciate the show or how much I've learned or how much this has changed my life. Or, you know, this particular tip led me to make this sale, as JT was saying. It was like, really, and I mostly only got, the only feedback I got prior to that mostly was negative feedback. So I don't know what it is, but in the last year in particular, all of a sudden it's like getting a lot of
I think it's the legalization of weed across the world. It's making people more
exactly
chilling down.
Everybody
out.
Yeah. Well, it depends.
Well, but as you said earlier, with having
so just imagine if the FDA hadn't rejected the MDMA therapy this week, then we'd be cooking.
But I think a lot of it has to do with having that big archive, like you said. Like, you know, I'll hear from people who are like, yeah, I started at, you know, I came into this a year or two ago and started at episode one, to which I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, this show was not. I was still figuring stuff out on episode one, yeah. You know, but they're like, right. They go back a long way and watch. I mean, it's fun looking at your stats from really early episodes, and they still get views, they still get listens. So yeah. the long tail of podcasting is pretty strong.
So our long tail are the early episodes. We've gotten more views on those episodes since we uploaded the whole backlog to YouTube than we did when they were originally viewed 10 years ago.
Right. Right.
It's interesting. But I'm always torn between, like, you know, being too dependent on YouTube or, you know, the viewership, but, you know.
That's why we spread it out. We're not all everything's not only on YouTube, and we've got, you know, plus we've got the Muse thing and, you know, which also provides some extra, you know, sort of functionality.
Well, I do audio only. I do audio only just because, like, the effort you have to do to get here on video and in editing, you know, with Billy, I mean, it's another step up. Like, you know, yeah. I mean, I had to comb my hair this morning. I had to, you know, put on a collared shirt, you know, it's a lot of extra work.
Tell the truth. You need to put pants on. I know.
No, I've got gym shorts on right now. So, okay. So I'm not going to stand up here. So
are you and you and Sag are going to play some pickleball later? Do you guys,
we had tried to set up a game last week. You know, Bainbridge Island was where pickleball was founded.
Yeah. And, court one.
Yeah. Court one is just down the street from Mike. So we get together occasionally and do it. But it's, you know, it's hard. He's got family. I've got family, that sort of stuff. It's like, you always mean to do stuff. I mean, he lives literally 3 miles from me. But
Yanni lives literally, you know, 10 minutes from me. And I before he had kids, would go out twice a month, you know, and now it's every 2 months.
And well, then, and Matt Overman lives up the street, too.
That's what I was going to ask. Who are you closer? Do you live closer to Matt or Mike?
Mike and Matt, just like Yoni, he's got, you know, two young kids, right? I remember those days, but it's hard to make time. So it's funny. It's like, hey Matt, I'll see you at the next Domain conference. You know,
you see, pass him on the bike pass,
or maybe the post office.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
well, speaking of the next Domain conference, so we were talking earlier before we jumped online about Istanbul, ICANN Istanbul in November. Is that when that is?
It's November. It's their annual general meeting. So
okay.
I haven't been to an ICANN meeting in a while. Well, I went to, they had like one for registrars and registries in LA a couple years ago that I went to. But, you know, it's Istanbul and, you know, worth checking out. So
you're gonna go, and Drew, you said you might go, and then
I might go is a strong, I mean, I'm hearing about strong it thinking about word, it for the first time today. I'm inspired to go, let's put it that way.
Easy trip for you, right?
I mean, it's a super easy trip. We have a direct flight.
I have a direct flight too. It's just 12 hours. So
hey, at least you get to fly direct though.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You have a direct flight from Seattle to Istanbul?
Turkish Airways. Yeah.
And so you're flying west. You're not flying east.
No, I'm flying east. Yeah. I think it goes east.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think about it. You're about five from Seattle.
So you're going, what do you got? You call it 6 hours to Boston, 6 hours across
the Atlantic.
About
5 hours to the coast.
And from me to Istanbul is about 4.5, 5.
No way, okay. Really?
That far?
Yeah. It's 3.5 to Munich.
This is the guy who said Istanbul's published 2,500 episodes of his podcast earlier. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's no, I mean, check if I'm flying to Boston, it's, I don't know, it's about 8 hours one way, 6.5 the other. So it's about, call it 6.5 hours. Boston to LA is 5. That's 11.5 hours. From me to Istanbul is about 4.5, 5 hours.
All right. Yeah. I guess, you know.
Now, look, that's with ups and downs. And so, you know, take 10% off that. But 12 hours would be short. That would be pretty fast, I'd say.
Yeah, well, you got the jet. You got the wind going with you on the way there. So,
but, yeah, but then that means on the way home, it's probably like 16.
I think they tack on an hour, but you know,
no. So if I go to Boston, it's six.
Are you going to make me look this up? Are we going to force your listeners to find?
I just want to know specifics. No, but I think it's, look,
it's a long trip. It's a long trip.
But you know, direct flight's not bad. And I think that's pretty cool to be able to, so, you know, when I used to run NameJet, half my team was in Seattle, so I'd have to get there from Jacksonville, which was
Unhappy dog that wants to be let into my office.
Which was almost like the furthest possible continental flight type deal. And we didn't have direct from, I'd have to fly to Atlanta, and that was always my routine, Atlanta to Seattle. But the, but if you can get direct, especially going international, that's pretty cool. And So, all right. So Istanbul in November, and then we've got the ICA Vegas meeting in January.
Right.
So for anybody who hasn't, you know, grabbed your tickets for that, definitely make that happen. Shout out to the ICA. I think the early bird window just closed, but I think there's still some.
It's cheap, right? Yeah. And the hotel is cheap. Everything about it's cheap. So other than your liquor bill, you know,
yeah, that's exactly. Up to you.
And your gambling debts. But again,
That's the biggest expense when you're there.
Yeah.
Media Options is the industry's leading domain broker specializing in domain acquisitions, high-value domain sales, and domain name consultation. As pioneers and thought leaders on the subject of the domain aftermarket and domain name value, plus through their clear domain acquisition service, Media Options offers startups and established corporations an unparalleled scope of high-value domain options, providing access to domain names and curation technologies not available elsewhere. Media Options believes in the power of a great domain name and is dedicated to helping you obtain yours. Call or email today to put a domain to work for you.
So
you
gotta, I want to get your take. You are, sorry to pivot, pivot here.
Yeah.
But we're bantering. So I want your take because you're the hard news daily guy, right? That's something meaningful happens in the space. You're the place I go to find out what happened. Get a summary of it, digest. Oh, it's just, that's just, you know, that's the go-to. I would like to understand from your perspective as, you know, domain investor and observer, where you think we are. Like if we, you know, you've been doing this for 20 years, as we've talked about, obviously, you know, I've been doing it a little bit less. But it's, you know, we've watched a trajectory, not in a straight line, but it's been, you know, it's been a mostly up and to the right trajectory in terms of price, up and to the right trajectory in terms of the volume of domain sales. You know, there's some blips for various reasons along the way, but for the most part, you know, up and to the right, nice steady growth. Domain registrations at VeriSign, domain registration globally with, you know, new TLDs as well. Everything basically up and to the right, nice steady growth. You know, we had this major COVID thing. Sorry, I'm just sort of setting the stage, but this major, you know, COVID period that, you know, was the best 2021, I guess, with best year of business for my company ever. We might beat it this year. We're on track too, but, you know, yet to be seen. But it was just blowout year, just amazing year. Also for VeriSign, right? Massive growth in domain registrations. A lot of people now working at home, starting little side hustles, starting new blogs, people complaining about the government, people complaining about everything in the world, lots of stuff to complain about. So people starting new websites, lots of domain growth for lots of different reasons. A lot of uncertainty, I would say, last year. You know, it was sort of a very wishy-washy year with markets, with news, with
interest,
you know, everything.
Rates,
interest rates. It was sort of almost like the year, you know, you could forget. It was 2023 was kind of sort of just a very strange year. I would say this year has been a mostly positive uptrend. I think for the first time, well, I would say the only other time I've looked forward with as much uncertainty as I have today would have been maybe think when apps became like around the time, do you remember when Gary Vee gave a keynote? And I don't remember which conference that was at, but Gary Vee gave a keynote and he told us that domains were going to go down in value because of apps. And I stood up and had a little, you know, I think Morgan Layton had videoed it, but he lost the video. But I had a little, you know, aggressive debate back and forth about, no, I don't think so. But it left me with a lot of uncertainty that lasted for a few years of like, oh, man, you know, are we sort of, you know, out on the front of this wave? And, you know, we don't even realize it's about to crash into the beach.
Real quick.
But anyway,
Real quick. Andrew Allman, you wrote an article about this. And I put the link in the chat in case anyone, but we'll put in the show notes as well. But that was back in 2014 when he spoke at Domain Fest, giving the keynote where he kind of talked about domains values going downward, which obviously is not.
Yeah. So it's probably like, you know, 12, 13, 14 range. Let's say that, you know, I was like a little uncertain, like, you know, okay, now I've started to really make significant, you know, I'm making some progress and I'm making some success in the business. You know, we're 6 years, 7 years into the business. I had momentum, but I was heads down, working hard, clearly with a heavy bias on like, this has to work. Right. So, it gave me a little bit of uncertainty, but as I really, that was sort of the introduction of me really thinking very intellectually about domains and what are domains and how do they fit into the world and are they necessary in the broader digital economy and what could replace it and why and all of that stuff. And, you know, it sort of led me to where I am today. And what I took a long time in saying was sort of, I'm at a place today where I feel, some level of uncertainty, although I'm slowly getting onto a sturdier foot, but, you know, some degree of uncertainty about what the future looks like. You know, what does AI mean for domain names? What is a change in the way that humans interact with the internet and make calls to the internet, to source information from the internet, to engage in e-commerce on the internet? What does all that mean for domain names 5 years from now or 10 years from now?
Right.
And I had a very bleak outlook, but I'm getting increasingly more, I would say, confident that domain names are probably here to stay. It's just that the attributes that create the value, the aftermarket value in these domains, the inherent value, may be driven by different attributes than they have before. We've seen that. The way SEO, you know, works has changed many times. And so value attributed to domains from SEO has changed for different reasons, right? And other things have changed the way that we utilize domains and maybe attribute value, the characteristics right. that we attribute value have changed. So I'm not necessarily afraid of that, but it does, you know, leave some degree of uncertainty. All that being said, where do you sort of see us in that sort of arc of evolution of domains?
Yeah, I think, you know, you do need to look back at history. I think most of the things that have impacted the domain business were things that we didn't foresee a couple of years before, right? So you look at the change to domain parking with Google, right? Like people in 2006 were still buying portfolios based on multiples of you know, traffic revenue, that sort of thing. That pretty much dried up. You look at apps, right? You know, that was one of those things that like, Gary V, you know, kind of talked there. There was some consideration about it. It ended up not being a big deal, obviously, to our industry. But, you know, you had the Chinese bubble, the Chinese investment bubble, that sort of thing. I've always said something will impact domains, and we probably don't know what that is yet. You know, the things we're looking at now probably aren't what impact that. I will say, you know, so thinking back to COVID, I think it certainly pulled forward a lot of demand. Or domains. Yeah. And so we're kind of in this hangover phase, right? And VeriSign's seen that, right? Their number of .coms registered is decreasing. It has been decreasing over the past couple of years. Not by much, but, you know, 1%, 2%, that sort of thing. And I think part of that is that, you know, every yoga studio, every restaurant that would have gotten eventually online, got online during COVID. So that definitely pulled forward some demand. And depending on where you play in the market, that's going to have a different impact. I know you play kind of more at the top end, right? So that is more VC driven, right? And investment driven. I play more in this kind of inventory name, $1 to $10,000 mark. I think that has some impact there, right? You know, the companies, like last year was a great year for me. It was probably my best ever. This year, not so much, right? And so I think, you know, part of
just
that
to push
is,
back on that though, and maybe you're right, maybe this the point I'm about to make doesn't necessarily apply to that range of domain, but I've always thought, and I'm fairly, you know, I have a high conviction in this, that the vast majority of our customers at the high end, but I would go beyond that, but it's an upgrade. The vast majority of domain sales that we make are not because it's a new name for a new business; it's a upgrade for an existing business. And so, I could see that overhang extending, you know, 2 years, 3 years, but then, you know, the businesses that survive and the ones that thrive, I would say they're teed up for, you know, that upgrade.
Certainly, right? And so that would be the higher end of the market, right?
Well, not necessarily, but even maybe not the yoga studio, but maybe he went on a
.info and now he wants the .com and it's like $5,000 or something like that. I got you. And you know, we also look last year, AI, right? I sold a bunch of domains related to AI. This year I haven't sold so many, right? So you see, you have little blips like that. So
this too is the next topic I want to get in. I want to get your take on is just, you know.
Yeah.
What do you see? But let's finish your thought here.
Yeah. So I think we're in a period in the domain industry, just looking at it as a whole, where we're kind of in the waiting place. What was that? Dr. Seuss book, you know, that sort of thing where, look, new top level domains, another round will be coming here in a couple years. That's going to put a jolt of interest in domain names, you know, regardless of what you think about, you know, other extensions, that sort of thing. It drives a lot of attention to domain names. So I think that
forces people who make decisions to think about domain names.
Right, right. And that
some
has an
of
impact.
Them are going to make a decision for, you know, A, and some are going to make a decision for B, but it's forcing them to make a decision. And so I think it's only a positive, you know, and right. That's what we saw in the last round is everybody thought, oh, it's going to dilute the market. No, it actually just woke up a whole bunch of people who had never given it any consideration and forced them to make decisions. Even if it was a maintain the status quo decision, it forced them to think about it.
The other thing I'd say is I think people have finally gotten over this whole idea that you can build your entire presence on social media. And, you know, you have to have a domain name. You have to have your own website because, you know, look, this kind of started with Facebook, right? Like you saw all those ads many years ago, like us on Facebook. And then what did Facebook do? They charged people to access their fans, right? Mm-hmm. And you see this everywhere, you know, TikTok, I don't think it's actually going to go away in the United States, but if you built your entire presence on there and now you're like, oh man, this is an existential risk to my entire livelihood if it's on there. You see it with Twitter changing ownership and changing how it operates. You know, you can't rely on one particular network for your online presence. And so having your own domain name as your hub, I think people have realized that we have enough use cases now to say, yeah, you can't just rely on these social networks because their interests are not aligned with yours. So I think people have come to that point too. So I'm fairly bullish. I think, you know, look, there are some things, especially for people like me that sell a lot of domains through the registrar path, like inventory names. We've got these changes that after Nick and you realize, oh, they hold all the cards, you know, or they hold most of the cards, that sort of thing. And so there are some risks there. I certainly see a lot of risk. You've got, you know, VeriSign and their continued quest to be able to raise prices, throwing domain investors under the bus. You know, is there some sort of risk there? I don't know. I don't really think so, other than, you know, saying bad things about us. But, you know, they're always risk. But I've always thought that everything I can see doesn't kill our industry. There's something out there that we can't see, right? And certainly 20, 30 years, when you look that far out, I mean, how long have we been doing this? You know, domains have been popular since the mid-90s. We've only been doing it 30 years. Who knows what the world will look like 30 years from now?
Yeah.
Hopefully we aren't still showing up to domain conferences and doing what we're doing now.
Maybe, hey, I think that could also be a good thing, right?
AJT, you want to go to the retirement, the old people special at IHOP and get our pancake breakfast
special.
That's where the the breakfast will no longer there won't be any dinners at clubs.
The early bird special.
No more parties at the clubs.
It'll be the Cuba Cup. Will be shuffleboard, and everything will change. I love the reference to the waiting place, the Dr. Seuss, and because I do think it is interesting, and it also is dependent on the type of portfolio that you have, right? Like you said, you know, you've seen different activity trends, and then we have, for the most part, you know, where last year was a bit of a slower sort of year. This year, you know, especially in that Q2. You know, we had a ton of activity and, you know, where there were a lot of big deals happening and, you know, and I think it's also important. And this even goes to some of the stuff that Chris talks about in his book. And when he gets into the different buyer types and, you know, different domains will drive different buyer types. Different buyer types are going to be based on different, bigger macroeconomic factors. After the COVID window kind of closed, you know, VCs were all sidelined. Right. And up to that point, I mean, it was like so many companies are getting funded. They're just throwing money at anything. So that was an even wilder time, right? And if you go back and kind of look at, you know, and I think I liked how you reference also the China bubble, because shortly after that Gary Vee talk back in 2014 was when the big China wave happened, where you just had this enormous influx of cash and interest in domains. And, you know, that was its own Wild West time of just so much activity and things going on and domains being traded like much, you know, probably the closest they've been traded to commodities with three-letter, four-letter.coms, you know, being bucketed and selling for a certain floor price on all the auction platforms and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So to your point, you almost don't know. You can kind of, you know, AI was a trend you can kind of get in front of, but a lot of these things, positive or negative, are things that we're not going to be able to anticipate because they're just outside of our purview. We're not even really thinking about
it. So. Yeah. I mean, even COVID, right? When COVID happened, my first thought is, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose all my money, right? You know, the world's going to end. You know, I was running my podcasting business at the time, the one that matched podcasters with guests. And, you know, like travel agents were emailing me, I need to cancel. I need a refund. You know, my business just went to zero. And we bought a house, and let's see, when did we buy this house? April 2020. It was like 2 months in, and we're like, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to lose so much money on this house, but we have to move. And then, you know, it was just like the next month, you know, those types of things, you just can't, you can't predict them. So you're at least consistently, right? I mean, I predicted, you know, 20 of the last three recessions, right? So it's very difficult to do this, you know, and so you just kind of, there are things you can control and you focus on that. And then of course you do have to think about this big picture. What are the threats coming? What are the opportunities, more importantly, that are coming? But, you know, I can guarantee you when we look back on this in 5 years, be like, oh, didn't see that coming, you know, or we thought that was going to be a risk, but it didn't end up being that big of a deal. So,
yeah, well, and I think that's the interesting thing. It's like, and one of the bigger is we talk about this also, trying to get the right price for your domain name. You know, when you realize you might have the best offer that you're going to get, right? Like you're in this wave of things and you have a domain, and we've had sellers that come to us and, you know, bring them some pretty awesome offer. And they're like, nah, I'm just going to wait because I think I can get 5X that. And then whatever that bubble is bursts or whatever that trend is dies. And then they're begging for that offer. And then it's like, nope, you won't, can't even get, you know, a fifth of that offer now.
Yeah.
And so it's trying to recognize.
Three-letter.coms are a perfect example, right? Three-letter, you know, I mean, the liquid value of those, what was the liquid value? Like the worst one was
2015, height of that Chinese bubble. You could sell any three-letter.com at the very peak. I mean, this was maybe there was a month or two where any three-letter.com, and JT knows this as well as anybody because they were all being liquidated on NameJet. But it was basically three-letter.coms peaked at about 60 grand, 65 for a good one. But you could get, if it was just floor price.
Yeah.
And I mean floor price like in the way that it means for an NFT. It was sweep by blindly as long as it doesn't have a vowel or V. No V, no vowels. Ideally, no K's. You know, there's a few, but it was basically no vowels, no V. 60 grand.
Yeah.
Bah.
And now we're talking wild. 12 to 15, maybe. Yep. Kind of the
and I remember there. Gold was about $1,000 an ounce. It was like $950 an ounce. And that was the equivalent of a fourletter.com. So if you had a fourletter.com, if you had a fourletter.com that had no B's and no vowels, it was worth a gold coin. It was basically 1-to-1, 1-to-1. And there was a whole bunch of people trying to, you know, accumulate a lot of fourletter.coms. I just remember thinking, like, man, it's the four-letter. I just start selling them, like, and literally turning them into gold coins. It was like, oh, yo, three-letter. Yeah, it's like, oh, no four-letter.com.
You've got them in that green little bin behind you. That's where you keep all your green, your gold coins.
All the four-character.com gold coins.
Yeah.
But each marked with the four-letter.com that he sold to get it.
Yeah, and, I got like I minted him in the back.
But yeah, no, I mean, and I do think it's pretty interesting when you see trends and the way that that all flows. So what is your thoughts then? So you remain you're bullish on domains in general.
Yeah.
What about a? So this was the piece that then Drew was going to get to, which was what do you think about the AI sort of wave and both.
Well, let me phrase it differently. Is it too early to call victory over Andy Booth on .AI is a flash in the pan. Yes, it's meaningful, but there simply isn't going to be enough, let's say, dedicated AI companies that should and would use a .AI domain name to fulfill the, you know, let's say, priced in or expected demand for these things. I would say I've proven to be right, but I might be too early and I'm clearly biased.
Well, look, I mean, there's a long term and a short term to this. Your thesis there, I agree in the long term that, you know, over time, does every company become an AI company? The example I use for something like this, I own the domain musicphones.com, which is a pretty crappy domain today if you look at it. But there was a time when I was like, oh my God, like Samsung is advertising this phone as a music phone because you could actually play music on your phone for the first time, right? Yeah. But now every phone is a music phone, right? Yeah. And so the term just, you know, it's doesn't make sense anymore, right?
Obsolete.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you can make the same argument with AI, which is every domain, every company.
Or actually, obsolete is the wrong word. It's just redundant.
Yeah, redundant, exactly. So, you know, do you need AI in your domain name? You know, no, because every company has it. Now, there are the companies that service, like provide AI services to other companies. I think that makes a little bit more sense.
Sure.
My big
and
thing
then the
with
question just becomes, how many of those are there, right?
Yeah.
And
wait, Andrew,
my big Alan, thing, you know, so there's a short-term opportunity to make money, long-term, you know, I think your thesis there probably bears out a little bit more. My big thing with .AI is that's a risky ccTLD to build a business on. You know, it's basically run by one guy who makes up the rules as he goes. And, you know, and you'll see it if you look back at the Wayback Machine on kind of the rules around it. It's like, oh, we're going to throw this rule in there. And some of them, I guarantee you, the people registering those domains don't know about.
They have no idea.
Like the one where, like, if you have like as seen on, you know, on your site or, you know, partners and you throw someone up there who's not actually a partner, which, you know, a lot of companies do, they could take your name away. And even if you remove that from your site, you know, you don't necessarily get the name back. Right. And so these are things that, you know, look, should you be doing that? No, but I guarantee you that'll catch a lot of people off guard. And I remember
I always say, you know, this is the same. It's the same conclusion for any ccTLD, particularly if you're not operating in that local market, because you know .co, which is so ubiquitous today, and yet you have hundreds of cannabis companies in the United States operating on a .co, and it is explicit in the terms of service of .co that you cannot, because cannabis is illegal in Colombia, you cannot advertise, market, or solicit the sale of cannabis in any way whatsoever on a .co domain. And yet.
I remember when a hurricane was blowing through Anguilla, however you pronounce it. And they're like, yeah, this weekend can't do DNS updates.
We just acquired Anguilla.com, by the way.
What's that?
We just acquired Anguilla.com.
And Cayman.com
and Anguilla.
That guy sent me a message on LinkedIn with all those Caribbean countries that were for sale. Yeah. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, well, that worked. That outreach worked. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, look, there risks to all these CCTLDs. Now, ones that have been commercial, I mean, look, now AI is so important to that island that, you know, I think there's a little bit more like they're not going to kill the golden goose, but it's still, I wouldn't want my entire company's email going through that when there's a, you know, a risk that I could, you know, lose my domain and that sort of thing. I just, to me, that should be a concern. And, you know, to see these huge companies use it,
you know,
I think
there's other concerns as well. Huh? I mean, if you consider that we're talking about AI, and probably one of the two or three single most important national security issues over the coming decades is going to be AI and trade secrets and all of this. And you're running your business on a .AI, and all of your data packets are going through Anguilla. And I don't know who could be sniffing those packets, right? And yeah, how easy is it to go influence the Anguillan government to, you know, or maybe not even get permission, but just, you know.
Yeah, I wonder how that works, because it is distributed, right? They're out, they're on all these, you know, the naming system's out on all these routers. Like, I don't think it all goes through there.
Yeah, but on the CCTLDs, is it, I don't know how decentralized it is.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's always, I think the biggest risk with CCTLDs, like with Libya when Bitly was using it, is if the country decides to suspend a domain name, then that's going to percolate along all the, you know, root servers, that sort of thing. So I think that, you know, like Notion using .so, like Somalia, yeah. I mean, did they even realize that when they, you know, so no. I think those are the types of places that That's kind of your biggest risk with those. Ones that have been commercialized that are in somewhat stable countries, I'm a little bit less concerned. I didn't know that about cannabis and .co.
Well, right? And Colombia just took a turn for the not so stable, right? So,
yeah, it's been in our lifetime, right? I mean, the 80s was, certainly, 90s certainly wasn't stable. And so,
definitely,
you know, but yeah, I think people overlook that. They don't even understand what a CCTLD is when they register those, right?
Yeah.
And even worse is, you know, some of these companies that are buying a subdomain, you know, of something, like, you remember all those ones that CentralNIC was selling, like something .gb.com, and then they sell gb.com and your website, you know. So I don't think a lot of people understand what they're buying when they buy those. So,
well, and you even have IT.com, you know, doing a lot.
Yeah, IT.com is doing the same thing now.
Super active and, you know, building a big, you know, sort of business around subdomains, which if it works, credit to them, but, you know, there's obviously risk there. So it's
Right. A lot of risk.
Yeah.
For the registrants, right? For the people who are registering the domains, totally. There's a lot of risk. They even bought that domain. Thankfully, you know, one of my criticisms, they bought that domain on a payment plan. And that was one of my first criticisms. Wait, you're building a subdomain. But then they ended up paying for it, right? Paying.
Well, that's that's crazy.
But I think, you know, the amount of money they put into promoting that, they probably should have bought a real new top level domain off someone, you know, and the stability there. So anyhow, not my money. They can make their investments how they want.
Oh,
so,
yeah. No, look, I mean, I think
capitalism, baby.
Yeah.
Well, credit
to
anybody doing innovative stuff. If it works and they're providing a valuable service. I mean, I think, you know, it's easy for us to play the, you know, the guys from the Muppets up in the, you know,
I will say though, so everything that you just said is 100% legit. Like, I would never build my business on a domain name, a third level domain name that relies on somebody else. It just doesn't seem like good, you know, business. But to each his own. But I have always had this since the very early days when I started to get serious about investing in domains and thinking about domains. I always had the sense that, you know, we're highly underutilizing the left of the dot, that there's a lot of opportunity for subdomains that and even third, you know, third levels and fourth levels and I don't know. I'm not. I feel like that sort of expansion is. I don't know what will drive it, I just have a very strong feeling that there's a whole space there to the left of the dot that isn't really being utilized. And I am starting to see it more with documentation and with, you know, creating these subdomains for various specific purposes. But I do think, you know, if you own, you know, I always use the example of mushrooms.com. Makes sense. You should be able to have, you know, oyster.mushrooms and, you know, magic.mushrooms and, you know, some of these really generic names are almost better off being utilized in that way. And I don't know if they'll be consolidated at some point. And then there's a registry that sort of offers specifically that. I mean, in some ways, that's what IT.com is trying to do. I don't know.
Go
ahead, JT.
I was just going to say that would be an interesting, you know, sort of direction for them to go, to take not just the IT.com subdomains, but create a service where if you have a domain that you could offer subdomains and offer people the ability to build a website and do email and all that, where you don't, you know, can't manage that yourself, but almost like a subdomain registry. I think would be interesting. You know,
registry one area, as a service kind of thing for that. Yeah, that is interesting.
And then because, you know, one,
I don't want to sidetrack us any further, but I actually have always kind of, and I think I've talked about it on here, but I've always sort of thought that like the future of VeriSign is probably some kind of sort of aftermarket registry as well. Like I can see a time when they make so much cash where it makes sense for them to sort of take that GoDaddy posture that GoDaddy did for a little while. Now they've totally pivoted away from it, but going out and just accumulating portfolios of domain names, and then literally, instead of the way that we do it, which is, you know, put your domains out there and sell them, it's literally just almost like a parallel registry to the .com registry, whereby they basically have this massive inventory of domain names that they can put through the registrar path.
So they basically start doing premium names by registering them to themselves. You're saying,
yeah, but you don't buy them. You just register them for some premium fee. Basically, the way that you know new TLDs are done. Basically, it would look like that. That's what it would look like. But they can't do it on originalregistration.coms. But it's less clear to me that they can't do it on aftermarket domains. So let's say they went out in the aftermarket and accumulated a portfolio of, you know, I don't know, 2 million domains.
Yeah, and are you saying leasing domains, right? Leasing the individual domains? Or are you just saying it's like a
company? Yeah, well, leasing, I mean, leasing, you know, basically just offering a contractual right in the same sense that you do when you register a .com. You know, I think that for 99% of people, they would probably not even think about it as leasing. They would just look at it as, oh, I bought this domain, and then the cost of buying that domain is whatever it is per year, whether it's monthly or
it's interesting where you have,
and in the same way it cost me $10 to register, you know, a new domain today, I can register a premium name today for $10,000 a year or $15,000 a year, or, you know, exactly the same way that the new GTLDs are doing with their premium inventory, except that it's aftermarket inventory that is being treated like a aftermarket registry operator. Yeah, and I think that that's like, probably something like that is probably, you know, the future if domains are not disrupted before then.
Well, I think it's the idea too of as new TLDs, you know, start to pull the, you know, pull apart the argument of .com as the monopoly and starts to give VeriSign more of an opportunity to, you know, be more flexible with what they can actually do as far as what, you know, buying, selling services, things like that. But let's not go all the way down that rabbit hole, though. I'm going to pull us out because we only have probably about 10 more minutes. One thing I do want to bring up, and because this is really, so Saiger had tweeted, and I just think the timing is cool, and I think the story is interesting. So we got aftermarket.com that just acquired domain.io, and Saiger tweeted yesterday saying, hey, this is kind of interesting, and then he tagged both Domain Sherpa and Domain Name Wire. So this is the service we provide, Mike, to the domain space as a whole. You say, hey, I want two of the top sort of platforms in the space to discuss this issue that is interesting to me, and we're going to just make it happen. This is almost like an AI type of thing. you know, where it's like you plug it in and want to know. But I want to be super reactive to this and, you know, kind of mention it. Cause I think it's interesting. Cause I wasn't even that aware that aftermarket.com, I don't know what has been happening with the domain or the site recently. And I know that,
it's funny. I think did we just talk about aftermarket on our last episode with Amar?
Well, yeah, because Amar used to be an owner.
I think you had, because someone misunderstood Amar saying that he owned it now, right? Whereas he sold it as part of that Thought Convergence sale.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aftermarket.com has an interesting history, right? Because Amar sold the technology behind that to Igloo.
To the escrow folks.
I thought it was Igloo.
Continue.
Maybe you might have sold it to Igloo. You might be right.
But he retained the domain name, right? Because they didn't want to pay for that. The amount that Amar wanted for that. So it sold in the Thought Convergence auction. That was a couple years ago. The kind of the liquidation auction. And yeah, I haven't
more than
really...
a couple. I mean, that was probably
it's like three or four years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think 2011. I don't know. I looked it up, but you know, it was because I wrote about it on I can look this up here. So aftermarket
2011 was when he sold the technology, but
sorry, 2021.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say when you said.
Yeah, it was December of 2021. So it did. Yeah, so it sold. I have here that it sold for $280,000, but that was when the. They extended the auctions after that, but I think that was the final price there. I haven't paid much attention to it afterward, but it was funny because someone just the other day, I was talking about how it'd be great if there was a way to sync your after Nick listings with Cedo and like your prices, like manage that all from one place. And apparently domain.io lets you do that. So then I saw this happen. So aftermarket.com is owned by Michael Esposito. I'm just looking at my communications here with Aaron Oxborough, right? Because he was running domain.io. So Michael is kind of the owner there, and you know, he has his own domain portfolio, and then Aaron and who is it? Frank, other guy.
Pavlonis.
Yeah, are kind of running it. So
okay.
Yeah, so I don't know what the future holds there, but I was actually just getting ready to start looking at domain.io and seeing, you know, if that solution might be good for kind of managing your portfolio. So
I remember looking at domain.io a while ago and thinking it was pretty cool. I just wasn't prepared to sort of
dedicate.
You're handing over it. Well, you're also, you know, something like that. You're kind of, yeah, there's work and then there's handing over the keys, right? You know, like
totally.
This system now has control. If you literally can change your price somewhere and it syncs somewhere else,
yeah.
What if someone gets into that? Right. And so that's always a risk.
And
you know, any SaaS business in our industry, it's hard to get domainers to pay for anything.
They don't pay for anything.
You know? And so
companies
like,
don't pay, the people don't pay.
That's it. That's why the podcasts are free.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but yeah, I think it's, you know, on the idea of another domain marketplace. I mean, you know, we just, you know, DNWE just changed hands, right? That's obviously, we talked about that on the last show. They're, you know, lead sponsor now for Domain Sherpa. And, you know, and I always felt their value prop when it was Josh, you know, there was a unique spin on that, which really was sort of a platform for domain investors, you know, sort of a liquidation, you know, obviously wholesale being literally in the name. You know, so I think, you know, what differentiates you, right? You've got Afternic, you've got Sato, you've got, you know, there's already a lot of stuff out. You know, some consolidation's happening, which is probably helpful to some of the smaller players. I mean, Dan.com, right, is effectively sort of being absorbed in to Afternic.
I mean, that won't exist in a year's time, right? I mean, that will be just on Afternic, right?
Which then maybe creates opportunity for some of these other companies to, you know, fill in sort of a little bit of the vacuum, you know, FD, you know, and some of the,
Adam.
You know, and so you know, you have an opportunity again for space to be filled by other players that could take more market share, you know. But I think kind of the point about domain.io, which I think is interesting, is that it's the tooling aspect that, you know, where it helps you to either consolidate, make your time more efficient, you know, obviously the goal is to make more sales, right? So whatever that ultimately, or to sell domains for higher prices. So at the end of the day, it's like, what helps me get to that point, right? And you would think that more eyeballs, the better. I mean, that's one thing that, you know, Adam is doing that I think is interesting is, you know, they're doing a whole lot of advertising, right? And then we see comments from either Andrew or Darpin talking about how, you know, some of that targeted advertising is leading to sales of high value domains. And I think that's super interesting. And, you know, so the, and obviously the Afternic piece, the reason they have so much like say in the way that they're able to, hey, we're going to now boost, and really all Boost is doing, it seems to be, is boosting how much they're getting paid. Yeah, exactly. But because they have so many eyeballs and coming through the registrar path and the GoDaddy influence and everything else, it's like, there's obviously, you know, there's a lot of value there. I mean, that's tough to give up. Right. And, so again, I think it'll be interesting to see the way a lot of these kind of sort of pieces fit together, how these players kind of coexist, who the winners and losers are. You know, but I do think adding more functionality and creating ways to better consolidate and help just domainers, I think, you know, could be somewhat of a winning formula. So I think that's interesting.
I'll say this. Anyone who tries to create competition in this industry in the aftermarket, I welcome it. You know, competition is so, so important. And it keeps, you know, you look at the innovation that Adam is doing and that Dan did, frankly, and how that pushed slowly but surely Afternic to you know, make changes and start offering things. And as long as there are alternatives, it keeps the fire under you. Once you only have one company, they can raise commissions as much as they want.
Yeah.
They don't have to improve the service. And you see that in a lot of industries. You see that in financial software with Intuit, right? Where the software sucks and they triple the price over a couple of years. You see it in a lot of industries. And it's so, so important for us. And, you know, Cito hasn't really invested in their platform in a long time. But the fact that it's there, and you could theoretically, even though you wouldn't be in the GoDaddy path, move your names over there and get in front of all these other registrars, that's helpful. What Adam's doing, that is helpful as well for the industry.
Yeah.
So it's just, I will support anyone who tries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cito's aftermarket, from what I understand, is a very small part of that business. Their aftermarket is not very, very strong. It's mostly a parking company at this point.
Yeah. Totally.
But it wasn't always like that. And I think it is interesting, you know, even look at some of these.
I think it has actually mostly always been like that. I don't know if their sales numbers are up or down or sideways, you know, in terms of aftermarket sales and brokerage. But I think people think about them as an aftermarket and a marketplace and all this, but in auctions, but it's, I think vast majority, like, I don't know what the number is, but I think it's,
I think you're vast right. Majority. Especially from a profit standpoint. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I even remember again, running when I ran AJET, you know, Sato felt like a bigger force in the aftermarket space, period, you know, and some of that's anecdotal, you know, and obviously they still have Dave Evanson and Mark.
I don't think so. I think our brokerage business is significantly larger than theirs. And I think their marketplace business,
well, they do a lot of volume, right? You know, I mean, they're doing a significant amount of volume at the lower ends here.
Yeah.
And that was so, also the space that we, you know, I mean, NameJet kind of, that was where we existed, right? So they were obviously a direct competitor. And I even remember, and Alleman, they, you know, back in the day, like when we would lose an expiry stream from NameJet, it would be going over to GoDaddy, which wasn't anything I'd have control over because it was a JV partner thing, decision to be made. And I remember we'd have these conversations and you would be almost like borderline, like disappointed or something. Cause you're like, anything that consolidates, you know, all the domains into one platform is, you know, anti-competitive. It's not good for innovation, you know, and ultimately it's probably anti-customer other than the fact that the domains are all in one place. But, you know, I mean, we even see it with, call it, more legacy businesses outside of the domain space where, you know, as things change, get disrupted. You know, I saw a tweet or an article talking about like the rideshare Uber came in, disrupted taxi cabs, but then Uber itself became sort of this monolithic, like, you know, sort of like, you know, I don't call it like a negative sort of toxic type of situation is from a company and, you know, some other thing. You can get into some of that detail, but what it did do is it pushed regular taxi cab companies to get a lot better. Right. So now,
yeah, start taking credit cards, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. So now, like, you know, you can kind of pick and choose, like, I don't need to take an Uber as much. I can literally just take a regular taxi and I get some of the same functionality. They'll take my card. I don't have to, like, you know, in some cases, the quality of the service has improved. You know, they've added some things that, in some cases, it's actually a better experience than an Uber or even a Lyft in some cities and places. So, you know, to your point, competition, you know, breeds innovation. It breeds sort of positive uplift. And, you know, so I think that in our space is no different, you know, with that kind of stuff. So, So that's an interesting development.
Compete, everyone, compete. And let me know about your new products so I can write about them. And, and some of them are going to suck. You know, creating a new marketplace from scratch is, you know, just a regular marketplace, probably not the way to go right now. But, you know, if anyone wants to try it, you know.
I mean, you know, with, you know, GBM auctions, you know, we gave that a try and they're, you know, they're pushing on that hard and they're making improvements. And, you know, basically we came to the conclusion that until they can onboard fiat users, it's it's a no-go. Right. And so we, you know, I was a sacrificial lamb and I put a bunch of names in there, no reserve. And, you know, I don't know, they weren't like amazing names, but they were decent names and they sold for $100 to $300 or $100 to $400 each.
Full disclosure, I
think what they've got, you know, is innovative, but you know, it's like,
I got a great deal.
I was excited, you know, to do it because I've been watching this develop for 5 years, 6 years. And I knew, you know, down the line that what this concept of auction could do. But man, you just hit brick wall after brick wall after brick wall, and it's tough business.
Well, and in that particular thing with the GBM piece, I mean, the tech that they've developed is really cool, and I think there's so much potential there. And like you said,
I was just talking about innovation in general and like launching these new services. Like I agree. I mean, the more competition, the more innovation, the better. But it will fail,
and a lot of people lose money trying things. But you know, kudos to them for trying. So,
rising tide lifts all boats, man. Let's go, as we say on the show all the time. So, all right, cool. Well, look, I think we've covered a lot of ground. We're basically out of time.
Want to shout out? Anything you want to talk about? Or
no, I just invite anyone who likes this show, check out my podcast, dnw.com/podcast, and Drew will be on there sometime again in the near future, and I'm sure it'll be a great episode as always. You can go back and listen to his old episodes on there too. Maybe he said something that he regrets. You know, you can go listen to it and ask him about it. But
so many things.
But I appreciate y'all having me on. It's great to be on here.
Great to have you on.
Yeah,
man. So great stuff. Appreciate you taking the time. As I say on this show all the time too, you guys are guests. It's really more like co-hosts, right? And, you know, obviously, especially for Drew. So thank you, Drew, as well, for your time, as always. And to the audience, as I say in every show, thank you all for tuning in. Without you, there is no us. And, so we did episode one, and now we'll figure out what episode. Well, I mean, it wasn't exactly episode one, but first interview, followed by whatever number interview this is.
I'm going to call it 501, because we had exactly 500 on YouTube. So we're going to call this 501. So it's basically the start of a new epoch.
There you go. And I will confirm with Billy. We'll put that in the show notes as well. And then maybe even tweet about it. All good stuff. And so thanks everybody, all the guests, hosts, audience as well. We'll see everybody next time here on Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. Peace out, y'all.